Support for To the Best of Our Knowledge comes from Holiday Vacations, sponsoring a New England and St. Lawrence Seaway cruise in September of 2017. Hosted by Ann Strainchamps and Steve Paulson of To the Best of Our Knowledge, with flights departing from throughout the U.S. Information is available at wpr.org/travel.
And now, Bookmarks, writers on books they love.
Hey, this is Alex Abramovich. I'm the author of Bullies of Friendship, and I'd like to talk about a book that means a lot to me. It's called Blues People. It's by Leroy Jones. Whenever you're in the middle of writing a book, there are books that you're a little bit afraid of. You're afraid of reading them because you're afraid that they're too close to the subject and too close to the heart of what you have to say about it. So they're the books that actually you avoid at all costs. Right now, the book I'm writing is a history of American music, and the book that's closest to the heart of that project, and it's one of my favorite books in the world, is this book from 1963 by Leroy Jones, who was a great poet and playwright in New York at the time. The book is subtitled Negro Music in White America, and what it really is, it's a history of the American people, not just the African American people, but really I would say the American people, told through American music, which turns out to be the absolutely perfect aperture to force that history through, because it's a history of the country as it was made by people who weren't necessarily literate, weren't in charge of the narrative that emerged, who were far from the centers of power, but who nevertheless interacted and helped shape and form not just the physical country, but also the spiritual and emotional and aesthetic core of the country. And Jones, who was very young when he wrote this book, he was later changed his name to Amiri Baraka. Jones really brilliantly captured the story of that narrative going all the way back to Africa. And I didn't understand until I read this book how deep the roots of this music were and how much of America and how much of the American people the music could reflect. It's also because he's a poet and just an amazing sentence writer. It's one of the most beautiful books you'll ever read. It's a nonfiction book that reads like a novel.
Alex Abramovich recommends Blues People by Leroy Jones. You'll find more bookmarks and an interview with Abramovich on our website at ttbook.org. You're listening to Esperanza Spalding. She's one of those young artists reinventing jazz. A few years ago, when she was just 26, she became the first jazz musician to win a Grammy Award for Best New Artist. She beat out Justin Bieber, Drake, and Mumford & Sons, so kind of shocked the music industry. By now, she's won multiple Grammys and admirers in and out of the jazz world, from Prince to Barack Obama. So when Esperanza Spalding was in town recently, Steve Paulson asked her to stop by.
Well, it is such a pleasure to have you
here.
Hey,
thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks. So I want to start out by talking about your new album, Emily's D+ Evolution. Is
correct.
That how you say it?
That's perfect.
Okay. And I know Emily is your middle name.
Yes.
So artistically, does that name have particular meaning for you?
Well, artistically, maybe functionally, it has meaning because it's my middle name. And Emily is a character that erupted out of my middle, I suppose.
So what was that that was in the middle then?
Wow, I'm discovering it. Movement, loudness, theatrical performance. Emily, this idea that came to me was really unique and it was really powerful. Like it really kind of came over me like a wave. And I said, whoa, okay, I guess I'm going to have to express this and manifest it. I probably won't be able to rest with myself until I do, you know?
Was there a moment when Emily sort of like, I don't know, Emily came into your consciousness?
Yeah, absolutely. It was after a concert in Austin, Texas. It was the night before my birthday and I got back to the hotel and I think this happens often. Well, it happens to everybody, but it also happens to creative people that you're just charged. You know, you didn't have coffee. You don't really know why, but and it's getting later and later, and you're just kind of buzzing with this energy. And often inspiration strikes in those moments, and that night it did for me. And in my mind's eye, I started seeing these little vignettes, and I saw this character like coming into a diner, and I was observing the way she was interacting with people she met, and it was kind of like a musical playing out. And I started to hear these song names and kind of see this performance style happening like on a late night show or something that was really active and colorful, and the music was colorful and active. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. Let me make as many notes as I can about what I'm seeing.
Wow, it was sort of like your unconscious was speaking to
you. I think so, yeah.
See this pretty girl, watch this pretty girl flow.
So I have to ask you about one of the tracks
sure.
on your album, Good Lava,
mm-hmm.
which is, it's about creativity. I mean, the lava, the eruption
yeah.
of creativity.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Good Lava originally started as a playful idea about what if when you're playing with your friends, jumping from furniture piece to furniture piece, when you say, oh, you can't touch the ground because it's lava, what if you were like, no, let's jump into it because it's good lava. Why are we afraid of this? It's our imagination. It can't burn us. It's wonderful. Let's dive into the good, gooey, sticky, scary stuff. That's where the juiciest possibilities happen, you know.
So it sounds like you think a lot about where creativity comes from. I mean, sort of how to tap into these different parts of yourself, maybe? I don't know. Or channeling other influences into your own art?
Wow, I don't think about it very much. I do think about the function of creativity within artistic expression and in day-to-day life. And I feel in my life that whenever I run into conflict or fear or like a sticky situation with colleagues or with family or my own, you know, work, I discover that, ooh, I don't know how to do that, or I'm angry at this person, or what? How are we going to get out of this? It's really the act of creative thinking and creative engagement that moves you from a place of stasis to a place of possibility. The key element, the universal element that we, A, all have in common, and B, all have in our fingertips, is creativity. And it's wonderful. It's like, it's the best news ever. You've got it. It's already yours. And I really think now that's what Emily came to teach me about. Well, what about creativity and why?
I want the world. I want the whole world. Give it to me now.
I'm curious about your background, because I've read that you started playing music really young, right?
Yeah, I did. I started playing violin after I saw Yo-Yo Ma on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Really? Just mm-hmm. like watching TV and you saw Yo-Yo
yeah.
Ma
well,
playing.
There were a few steps between when I saw him when I got the violin, but yeah.
Like how old were you?
I think I was 5.
Wow.
Really, I wasn't looking to get into music. I heard Yo-Yo Ma play that thing. He played one of the Bach cello suites, now I know. And I couldn't believe it. I had never seen anything like that before, and I wanted to do it. I wanted to make those kinds of sounds. I didn't know what a cello was called, so I asked for violin, and that was not the instrument I was expecting to get. But
and you played for a long time, right?
I did, yeah. The music never seemed like a career or like a life choice or something that I had to do. My parental figures never guilted me into practicing or forced me to practice. I liked to make sounds. I still like to just make sounds.
So I read somewhere that your mother actually pulled you out of school, right?
Yeah, that was for other unrelated reasons. I just had a lot of health issues that started around the fifth grade, and I ended up missing so much school that I couldn't catch up. It became really stressful. So she pulled me out and started homeschooling. Because I grew up with a single working mom, our version of homeschooling was me home alone all day with the textbooks that we'd checked out from the library for the, you know, the various subjects for that year. And so I was free and very unsupervised. And I spent a lot of that time making sounds, actually. and playing piano and playing clarinet and all manner of instruments that I could get my hands on.
So kind of, you're just kind of teaching yourself then.
Kind of, yeah.
But you were playing classical music during those, I mean, basically when you were a teenager, right?
Yeah, yeah. All through, I'm 5 through 15, I was a bona fide little classical musician. But I should say, to be honest, I really had no respect for authority. And I never did what I was supposed to. I never practiced what I was supposed to practice, ever. I feel so sorry for those teachers now, because I've had some of those students, and it's heartbreaking, and it's maddening when you're giving your time and the kid just doesn't care. And I was that kid, unfortunately.
Well, it seemed to turn out pretty
well. Yeah, in some ways. Now, I think the underlying energy of that was like, I need to be myself.
So when did you start playing jazz?
Around 15. Yeah, when I discovered the bass.
The stand-up bass,
yeah. I really loved the music I was playing as a classical musician. I loved the music. That's the only thing that kept me in there. I didn't like the people. I thought everybody was really tyrannical, and now I have that vocabulary. I didn't have the vocabulary then. And I thought they didn't like me, and I thought they thought I sucked, and I felt like I was sort of like a token colored person making the program look good. I felt very uncomfortable the whole time. But music, oh my God, you know, we'd play Scheherazade, and I think I actually worked my way up to concertmaster because I was jealous that this other boy had the solo spot on that piece. But once the music came in, and you're in the center of this sea of sound and harmony, I mean, everything else melted away, you know? That's what kept me in the music. So at 15, then discovering improvised music.
It's sort of like what you were waiting for all that time.
That's what I was waiting for my whole life. And I liked the people better, you know? At least in Portland, people I started to meet that were in the jazz community were really cool, you know, and I felt really seen, and I felt really encouraged to explore, which is what I've been missing in the classical pedagogy.
And did you start playing in clubs then? Pretty soon after that?
Yeah, I did. You can always work if you're a good bass player. And I'm sure there was a certain novelty factor of like this little kid showing up, this girl that...
There probably aren't that many girl bassists.
There weren't very many girl anythings outside of the classical music scene. Anyway, all of this is just backstory, but improvisation, that was like the message. That was the answer and the message and everything. And you know, even though right now I'm not as engaged in the jazz scene.
But you're still sort of, you're known.
Yeah.
As a jazz performer.
Yeah, that doesn't go away. What I was gonna say is that even though I'm not actively engaged to the same degree in the jazz community, the life, to me, what it means to be an improvising musician is like the bedrock of my life. That's how I see the world. My life is an improvisation. It's a prepared improvisation. And being a jazz musician, quote unquote, I'm obviously related to that core lineage of what the aesthetic heritage and the cultural heritage of the music is. But just because what I do doesn't look or sound like the origins of that lineage, it's still in the family, obviously.
Do you worry? I mean, there's so much talk. I mean, there has been for years now about concern, worry about jazz. Is there an audience? Does that bother you?
I mean, it's people's music, you know? In a way, it's like it evolves on its own to a certain degree. Like, none of us can hold it in one container and say, this is it and the rest is not. It lives in the people who practice it. That's it. So I can't even say anything about what it is. All I can say is what it is to me. Still, when I wake up in the morning, if I want to get going, if I need something to like soothe my soul or lift my spirits, I want to hear Oscar Peterson. That's not because I know I should listen to Oscar Peterson. I want to, like, I want to eat donuts. Or like, I want to eat a salad if I want that. It resonates with who I am for whatever reason. And it did the first time I heard it. It just hit me. And I said, this is my thing. I didn't know you were here. I didn't know you were here, Solos. I didn't know you were here, Coltrane. I didn't know you were here, Paul Chambers. Like, wow, thank you. And guess what? There are other idioms and there are other permutations from similar environmental circumstances that will arise that have the heart and the spirit of improvisation and of studied application, okay, that will rise and reach and soothe and be the balm and the medicine for the people who need it, just like jazz music was and is.
Are you thinking about rap
here? Yeah, I'm thinking about rap.
So you're sort of like drawing this direct connection between rap and jazz.
I'm just thinking about folk music, you know? And of course, like, folk music doesn't mean simple. To me, like, jazz music and rap music is like a place where you feel the competitive urgency of being great, but your vocabulary is your experience. You use that vocabulary to become the best you can at telling your story with other people. It's a beautiful experience, I want to say, to feel like, oh, damn, they're doing, woof, they said it. I can't say it like that. You go home and you get your vocabulary together and you figure out how you can show up the next Saturday or whatever and be present and be heard and contribute in the language. And that phenomenon is not unique to jazz.
Streets lined with red brick and green branches. Wooden rainy days that might seem bleak. Our rain is the paint that makes the land lush and the folks unique. City parks, wild berries, and the bridges. Rolling river bringing good.
That's singer and bassist Esperanza Spalding. She talked with Steve Paulson. Coming up, Norwegian phenom Tord Gustafsson picks a favorite jazz album and a conversation with Vijay Iyer about improvisation and the parallels between jazz and basketball. I'm Ann Strainchamps. It's to the best of our knowledge from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International.